Chapter 17, The Descent of the River Ganges. The 17th chapter describes the origin of the Ganges River and how it flows in and around Ilavritavarsh. There is also a description of the prayers Lord Shiva offers to Lord Sankarshan, part of the quadruple expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Vishnu once approached Bali Maharaj while the king was performing a sacrifice. The Lord appeared before him as Trivikram, or Vamana, and begged alms from the king in the form of 3 steps of land. With 2 steps, Lord Vamana covered all 3 planetary systems and pierced the covering of the universe with the toes of his left foot. A few drops of water from the causal ocean leaked through this hole and fell on the head of Lord Shiva, where they remained for 1,000 millenniums. These drops of water are the sacred Ganges River. It first flows onto the heavenly planets, which are located on the soles of Lord Vishnu's feet. The Ganges River is known by many names, such as the Bhagirathi and the Janavi. It purifies Dhruvaloka and the planets of the 7 sages because both Dhruva and the sages have no other desire than to serve the Lord's lotus feet. The Ganges River, emanating from the lotus feet of the Lord, inundates the heavenly planets, especially the moon, and then flows through Brahmapuri atop Mount Meru. Here the river divides into 4 branches known as Sita, Alakananda, Chakshu, and Bhadra, which then flow down to the ocean of salt water. The branch known as Sita flows through Shekhara Parvat and Gandhamadana Parvat, and then flows down to Bhadrashva Varsh, where it mixes with the ocean of salt water in the west. The Chakshu branch flows through Malyavangiri, and after reaching Ketumala Varsh, mixes with the ocean of salt water in the west. The branch known as Bhadra flows onto Mount Meru, Mount Kumuda, and the Nila, Sweta, and Sringavan mountains before it reaches Kurudesh, where it flows into the ocean of salt water in the north. The Alakananda branch flows through Brahmalaya, crosses over many mountains, including Hemakuta and Himakuta, and then reaches Bharat Varsh, where it flows into the southern side of the ocean of salt water. Many other rivers and their branches flow through the 9 Varshas. The tract of land known as Bharat Varsh is the field of activities, and the other 8 Varshas are for persons who are meant to enjoy heavenly comfort. In each of these 8 beautiful provinces, the celestial denizens enjoy various standards of material comfort and pleasure. A different incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead distributes his mercy in each of the 9 Varshas of Jambudvip. In the Ilavrita Varsh, Lord Shiva is the only male. There he lives with his wife Bhavani, who is attended by many maidservants. If any other male enters that province, Bhavani curses him to become a woman. Lord Shiva worships Lord Sankarshan by offering various prayers, one of which is as follows. My dear Lord, please liberate all your devotees from material life and bind all the non-devotees to the material world. Without your mercy, no one can be released from the bondage of material existence. Verse 1. Shukadeva Goswami said, My dear King, Lord Vishnu, the enjoyer of all sacrifices, appeared as Vamanadev in the sacrificial arena of Bali Maharaj. Then he extended his left foot to the end of the universe and pierced a hole in its covering with the nail of his big toe. Through the hole, the pure water of the causal ocean entered this universe as the Ganges River. Having washed the lotus feet of the Lord, which are covered with reddish powder, the water of the Ganges acquired a very beautiful pink color. Every living being can immediately purify his mind of material contamination by touching the transcendental water of the Ganges, yet its waters remain ever pure. Because the Ganges directly touches the lotus feet of the Lord before descending within this universe, she is known as Vishnupadi. Later, she received other names like Janavi and Bhagirathi. After 1,000 millenniums, the water of the Ganges descended on Dhruvaloka, the topmost planet in this universe. Therefore, all learned sages and scholars proclaim Dhruvaloka to be Vishnupad, situated on Lord Vishnu's lotus feet. Purport. In this verse, Shukadev Goswami describes the glories of the Ganges River. The water of the Ganges is called Patita Pavani, the deliverer of all sinful living beings. It is a proven fact that a person who regularly bathes in the Ganges is purified both externally and internally. Externally, his body becomes immune to all kinds of disease, and internally, he gradually develops a devotional attitude toward the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Throughout India, many thousands of people live on the banks of the Ganges, and by regularly bathing in her waters, they are undoubtedly being purified both spiritually and materially. Many sages, including Shankaracharya, have composed prayers in praise of the Ganges, and the land of India itself has become glorious because such rivers as the Ganges, Jamuna, Godavari, Kaveri, Krishna, and Narmada flow there. Anyone living on the land adjacent to these rivers is naturally advanced in spiritual consciousness. Srila Madhvacharya says, Varahe vama padam tu, tad anyeshu tu dakshinam, padam kalpeshu bhagavan, ujahara tu vikrama. Standing on his right foot and extending his left to the edge of the universe, Lord Vamana became known as Trivikram, the incarnation who performed three heroic deeds. Verse 2. Dhruva Maharaj, the famous son of Maharaj Uttanapad, is known as the most exalted devotee of the Supreme Lord because of his firm determination in executing devotional service. Knowing that the sacred Ganges River washes the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu, Dhruva Maharaj, situated on his own planet, to this very day accepts that water on his head with great devotion. Because he constantly thinks of Krishna very devoutly within the core of his heart, he is overcome with ecstatic anxiety. Tears flow from his half-opened eyes, and eruptions appear on his entire body. Purport. When a person is firmly fixed in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is described as Virabrata, fully determined. Such a devotee increases his ecstasy in devotional service more and more. Thus, as soon as he remembers Lord Vishnu, his eyes fill with tears. This is a symptom of a Mahabhagavat. Dhruva Maharaj maintained himself in that devotional ecstasy, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also gave us a practical example of transcendental ecstasy when he lived at Jagannath Puri. His pastimes there are fully narrated in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Verse 3. The seven great sages, Marichi, Vasishta, Atri, and so on, reside on planets beneath Dhruvaloka. Well aware of the influence of the water of the Ganges, to this day they keep Ganges water on the tufts of hair on their heads. They have concluded that this is the ultimate wealth, the perfection of all austerities and the best means of prosecuting transcendental life. Having obtained uninterrupted devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they neglect all other beneficial processes like religion, economic development, sense gratification, and even merging into the Supreme. Just as jnanis think that merging into the existence of the Lord is the highest truth, these seven exalted personalities accept devotional service as the perfection of life. Purport. Transcendentalists are divided into two primary groups, the nirvisheshavadis, or impersonalists, and the bhaktas, or devotees. The impersonalists do not accept spiritual varieties of life. They want to merge into the existence of the Supreme Lord and his Brahman feature, the Brahmajyoti. The devotees, however, desire to take part in the transcendental activities of the Supreme Lord. In the upper planetary system, the topmost planet is Dhruvaloka, and beneath Dhruvaloka are the seven planets occupied by the great sages, beginning with Marici, Vasishta, and Atri. All these sages regard devotional service as the highest perfection of life. Therefore, they all carry the holy water of the Ganges on their heads. This verse proves that for one who has achieved the platform of pure devotional service, nothing else is important, even so-called liberation, kaivalya. Srila Sridhar Swami states that only by achieving pure devotional service of the Lord can one give up all other engagements as insignificant. Prabodhananda Saraswati confirms his statement as follows. Kaivalyam nara kayate tridasa pur akasha pushpayate durdan tendriya kala sarpa patali protkata damstrayate vishvampurna sukayate vidhi mahendra dish cha kitayate yat karunya kataksha vaibhava vatam tam garam evastumaha. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has perfectly enunciated and broadcast the process of bhakti yoga. Consequently, for one who has taken shelter at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the highest perfection of the Mayavadis, kaivalya, or becoming one with the Supreme, is considered hellish, to say nothing of the karmis' aspiration to be promoted to the heavenly planets. Devotees consider such goals to be worthless phantasmagoria. There are also yogis who try to control their senses, but they can never succeed without coming to the stage of devotional service. The senses are compared to poisonous snakes, but the senses of a bhakta engaged in the service of the Lord are like snakes with their poisonous fangs removed. The yogi tries to suppress his senses, but even great mystics like Vishvamitra fail in the attempt. Vishvamitra was conquered by his senses when he was captivated by Menaka during his meditation. She later gave birth to Shakuntala. The wisest persons in the world, therefore, are the bhakti yogis, as Lord Krishna confirms in Bhagavad Gita. Yoginam api sarve sham madgate nantaratmana. Shradavan bhajate yomam same yukta tamo mataha. Of all yogis, he who always abides in me with great faith, worshipping me in transcendental loving service, is most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. Verse 4. After purifying the seven planets near Dhruvaloka, the pole star, the Ganges water is carried through the spaceways of the demigods in billions of celestial airplanes. Then it inundates the moon, Chandraloka, and finally reaches Lord Brahma's abode atop Mount Meru. Purport. We should always remember that the Ganges River comes from the causal ocean, beyond the covering of the universe. After the water of the causal ocean leaks through the hole created by Lord Vamanadev, it flows down to Dhruvaloka, the pole star, and then to the seven planets beneath Dhruvaloka. Then it is carried to the moon by innumerable celestial airplanes, and then it falls to the top of Mount Meru, which is known as Sumeru Parvat. In this way, the water of the Ganges finally reaches the lower planets and the peaks of the Himalayas, and from there it flows through Haridwar and throughout the plains of India, purifying the entire land. How the Ganges water reaches the various planets from the top of the universe is explained herein. Celestial airplanes carry the water from the planets of the sages to other planets. So-called advanced scientists of the modern age are trying to go to the higher planets, but at the same time they are experiencing a power shortage on Earth. If they were actually capable scientists, they could personally go by airplane to other planets, but this they are unable to do. Having now given up their moon excursions, they are attempting to go to other planets, but without success. Verse 5. On top of Mount Meru, the Ganges divides into four branches, each of which gushes in a different direction, east, west, north, and south. These branches, known by the names Sita, Alakananda, Chakshu, and Bhadra, flow down to the ocean. Verse 6. The branch of the Ganges known as the Sita flows through Brahmapuri atop Mount Meru, and from there it runs down to the nearby peaks of the Kesarachala Mountains, which stand almost as high as Mount Meru itself. These mountains are like a bunch of filaments around Mount Meru. From the Kesarachala Mountains, the Ganges falls to the peak of Gandhamadana Mountain and then flows into the land of Bhadrashva, Varsh. Finally, it reaches the ocean of salt water in the west. Verse 7. The branch of the Ganges known as Chakshu falls onto the summit of Malyavan Mountain and from there cascades onto the land of Ketumala Varsh. The Ganges flows incessantly through Ketumala Varsh, and in this way also reaches the ocean of salt water in the west. Verse 8. The branch of the Ganges known as Bhadra flows from the northern side of Mount Meru. Its waters fall into the peaks of Kumuda Mountain, Mount Nila, Sweta Mountain, and Sringavan Mountain in succession. Then it runs down into the province of Kuru, and after crossing through that land, flows into the saltwater ocean in the north. Verse 9. Similarly, the branch of the Ganges known as Alakananda flows from the southern side of Brahmapuri, Brahma Sarana. Passing over the tops of mountains in various lands, it falls down with fierce force upon the peaks of the mountains, Hemakuta and Himakuta. After inundating the tops of those mountains, the Ganges falls down onto the tract of land known as Bard Varsh, which she also inundates. Then the Ganges flows into the ocean of salt water in the south. Persons who come to bathe in this river are fortunate. It is not very difficult for them to achieve, with every step, the results of performing great sacrifices like the Rajasuya and Ashvamedha Yajnas. Purport. The place where the Ganges flows into the salt water of the Bay of Bengal is still known as Ganga Sagara, or the meeting place of the Ganges and the Bay of Bengal. On Makara Sankranti, in the month of January, February, thousands of people still go there to bathe, hoping to be liberated. That they can actually be liberated in this way is confirmed herein. For those who bathe in the Ganges at any time, The results of great sacrifices like the Ashvamedha and Rajasuya Yogas are not at all difficult to achieve. Most people in India are still inclined to bathe in the Ganges, and there are many places where they can do so. At Prayag, Allahabad, many thousands of people gather during the month of January to bathe in the confluence of the Ganges and Jamuna. Afterward, many of them go to the confluence of the Bay of Bengal and the Ganges to take bath there. Thus, it is a special facility for all the people of India that they can bathe in the water of the Ganges at so many places of pilgrimage. Verse 10. Many other rivers, both big and small, flow from the top of Mount Meru. These rivers are like daughters of the mountain, and they flow to the various tracts of land in hundreds of branches. Verse 11. Among the nine varshas, the tract of land known as Bharat Varsh is understood to be the field of fruitive activities. Learned scholars and saintly persons declare the other eight varshas to be meant for very highly elevated pious persons. After returning from the heavenly planets, they enjoy the remaining results of their pious activities in these eight earthly varshas. Purport. The heavenly places of enjoyment are divided into three groups: the celestial heavenly planets, the heavenly places on earth, and the Bila heavenly places, which are found in the lower regions. Among these three classes of heavenly places, Bhauma Svarga Pada Ni, the heavenly places on earth are the eight varshas other than Bharat Varsh. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Kshine Punye Martyalokam Bishanti. When the persons living in the heavenly planets exhaust the results of their pious activities, they return to this earth. In this way, they are elevated to the heavenly planets, and then they again fall to the earthly planets. This process is known as Brahmanda Brahmana, wandering up and down throughout the universes. Those who are intelligent, in other words, those who have not lost their intelligence, do not involve themselves in this process of wandering up and down. They take to the devotional service of the Lord so that they can ultimately penetrate the covering of this universe and enter the spiritual kingdom. Then they are situated on one of the planets known as Vaikuntha Loka, or still higher, Krishna Loka, Goloka Vrindavan. A devotee is never caught in the process of being promoted to the heavenly planets and again coming down. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, E rupe brahmanda brahmite konya bhagavana jeev, guru krishna prasadi bhai bhakti lata bij. Among all the living entities wandering throughout the universe, one who is most fortunate comes in contact with a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus gets the opportunity to execute devotional service. Those who are sincerely seeking the favor of Krishna come in contact with a guru, a bona fide representative of Krishna. The Mayavadis indulging in mental speculation and the Karmis desiring the results of their actions cannot become gurus. A guru must be a direct representative of Krishna, who distributes the instructions of Krishna without any change. Thus, only the most fortunate persons come in contact with the guru. As confirmed in the Vedic literatures, tad vijnanartham sa gurum eva abhigacchet. One has to search out a guru to understand the affairs of the spiritual world. Srimad Bhagavatam also confirms this point. Tasmad gurum prapadyeta jigyasu shreya uttamam. One who is very interested in understanding the activities in the spiritual world must search out a guru, a bona fide representative of Krishna. From all angles of vision, therefore, the word guru is especially meant for the bona fide representative of Krishna and no one else. Padma Purana states, A Vaishnava Guru Nasyat. One who is not a Vaishnav or who is not a representative of Krishna cannot be a guru. Even the most qualified Brahmin cannot become a guru if he is not a representative of Krishna. Brahmins are supposed to acquire 6 kinds of auspicious qualifications. They become very learned scholars, patana, and very qualified teachers, patana. They become expert in worshiping the Lord of the demigods, yajana, and they teach others how to execute this worship, yajana. They qualify themselves as bona fide persons to receive alms from others, pratigraha, and they distribute the wealth in charity, dana. Yet even a Brahmin possessing these qualifications cannot become a guru unless he is the representative of Krishna, gurur nasyat, Vaishnava swapacho guru. But a Vaishnav, a bona fide representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, can become a guru even if he is swapacha, a member of a family of dog eaters. Of the 3 divisions of heavenly planets, Swargaloka, Bauma Swarga is sometimes accepted as the tract of land in Bharat Varsh known as Kashmir. In this region, there are certainly good facilities for material sense enjoyment, but this is not the business of a pure transcendentalist. Rupa Goswami describes the engagement of a pure transcendentalist as follows. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma jnanavritam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktir uttama. One should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord, Krishna, favorably and without desire for material profit or gain through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. That is called pure devotional service. Those who fully engage in devotional service to Krishna just to please him are not interested in the 3 divisions of heavenly places, namely Divya Svarg, Bauma Svarg, and Bila Svarg. Verse 12. In these 8 varshas, or tracts of land, human beings live 10,000 years according to earthly calculations. All the inhabitants are almost like demigods. They have the bodily strength of 10,000 elephants. Indeed, their bodies are as sturdy as thunderbolts. The youthful duration of their lives is very pleasing, and both men and women enjoy sexual union with great pleasure for a long time. After years of sensual pleasure, when a balance of 1 year of life remains, the wife conceives a child. Thus, the standard of pleasure for the residents of these heavenly regions is exactly like that of the human beings who lived during Treta Yuga. Purport. There are 4 yugas, Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, and Kali Yuga. During the first yuga, Satya Yuga, people were very pious. Everyone practiced the mystic yoga system for spiritual understanding and realization of God. Because everyone was always absorbed in samadhi, no one was interested in material sense enjoyment. During Treta Yuga, people enjoyed sense pleasure without tribulations. Material miseries began in Dwapara Yuga, but they were not very stringent. Stringent material miseries really began from the advent of Kali Yuga. Another point in this verse is that in all 8 of these heavenly varshas, although men and women enjoy sex pleasure, there is no pregnancy. Pregnancy takes place only in lower grade life. For example, animals like dogs and hogs become pregnant twice a year, and each time they beget at least 6 offspring. Even lower species of life, such as snakes, give birth to hundreds of young at one time. This verse informs us that in grades of life higher than ours, pregnancy occurs once in a lifetime. People still have sex life, but there is no pregnancy. In the spiritual world, people are not very attracted to sex life due to their exalted devotional attitude. Practically speaking, there is no sex life in the spiritual world, but even if sometimes it does occur, there is no pregnancy at all. On the planet Earth, however, human beings do become pregnant, although the tendency is to avoid having children. In this sinful age of Kali, people have even taken to the process of killing the child in the womb. This is the most degraded practice. It can only perpetuate the miserable material conditions of those who perform it. Verse 13. In each of those tracts of land, there are many gardens filled with flowers and fruits, according to the season, and there are beautifully decorated hermitages as well. Between the great mountains, demarcating the borders of those lands, lie enormous lakes of clear water filled with newly grown lotus flowers. Aquatic birds such as swans, ducks, water chickens, and cranes become greatly excited by the fragrance of lotus flowers, and the charming sound of bumblebees fills the air. The inhabitants of those lands are important leaders among the demigods. Always attended by their respective servants, they enjoy life in gardens alongside the lakes. In this pleasing situation, the wives of the demigods smile playfully at their husbands and look upon them with lusty desires. All the demigods and their wives are constantly supplied with sandalwood pulp and flower garlands by their servants. In this way, all the residents of the eight heavenly varshas enjoy, attracted by the activities of the opposite sex. Purport. Here is a description of the lower heavenly planets. The inhabitants of those planets enjoy life in a pleasing atmosphere of clear lakes filled with newly grown lotus flowers, and gardens filled with fruits, flowers, various kinds of birds, and humming bees. In that atmosphere, they enjoy life with their very beautiful wives, who are always sexually stimulated. Nonetheless, they are all devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as will be explained in subsequent verses. The inhabitants of this earth also desire such heavenly enjoyment, but when they somehow or other achieve imitation pleasures like sex and intoxication, they completely forget the service of the Supreme Lord. In the heavenly planets, however, although the residents enjoy superior sense gratification, they never forget their positions as eternal servants of the Supreme Being. Verse 14. To show mercy to his devotees in each of these nine tracts of land, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, known as Narayan, expands himself in his quadruple principles of Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. In this way, he remains near his devotees to accept their service. Purport. In this connection, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur informs us that the demigods worship the Supreme Lord in his various deity forms, Archavigraha, because, except in the spiritual world, the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be directly worshipped in person. In the material world, the Lord is always worshipped as the Archavigraha, or deity in the temple. There is no difference between the Archavigraha and the original person, and therefore those who are engaged in worshipping the deity in the temple in full opulence, even on this planet, should be understood to be directly in touch with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, without a doubt. As enjoined in the Shastras, Arche Vishnau Shiladir Gurushu Naramati. No one should treat the deity in the temple as stone or metal, nor should one think that the spiritual master is an ordinary human being. One should strictly follow this Shastric injunction and worship the deity, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, without offenses. The spiritual master is the direct representative of the Lord, and no one should consider him an ordinary human being. By avoiding offenses against the deity and the spiritual master, one can advance in spiritual life or Krishna consciousness. In this regard, the following quotation appears in the Lagu Bhagavatamrita. Padme tu paramam vyomna purvadye dik chatustaye vasudeva dayo vyuhash chatvara katitakramat tatapada vibhutau cha nivasanti kramati me jalavriti stavaikunta stita veda vatipure satyord ve vaishnave loke nityakye dwarakapure Shuradad utare sweta dvipe charai vatipure. Charambudi stitante krodha paryanka damani sachatiye kvachit tantre navavyuha prakirtita. Chatvaro vasudeva dya narayana nishrinkako. Hayagrivo maha krodo brahmacheti navodita. Tatra Brahma tu vigyaya pravokta vidayahari. In the Padma Purana, it is said that in the spiritual world, the Lord personally expands in all directions and is worshipped as Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradumna, and Aniruddha. The same God is represented by the deity in this material world, which is only one quarter of his creation. Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradumna, and Aniruddha are also present in the four directions of this material world. There is a Vaikuntha Loka covered with water in this material world, and on that planet is a place called Vedavati, where Vasudev is located. Another planet known as Vishnu Loka is situated above Satya Loka, and there Sankarshan is present. Similarly, in Dwarkapuri, Pradumna is the predominator. On the island known as Swetadweep, there is an ocean of milk, and in the midst of that ocean is a place called Airavati Pura, where Aniruddha lies on Ananta. In some of the Satvata Tantras, there is a description of the nine Varshas and the predominating deity worshipped in each. 1. Vasudev, 2. Sankarshan, 3. Pradumna, 4. Aniruddha, 5. Narayan, 6. Nisringha, 7. Hayagriva, 8. Mahavaraha, and 9. Brahma. The Lord Brahma mentioned in this connection is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When there is no fit human being to empower as Lord Brahma, the Lord himself takes the position of Lord Brahma. Tatra Brahma tu vigyaya pravokta vidaya hari. That Brahma mentioned here is Hari himself. Verse 15. Shukadeva Goswami said, in the tract of land known as Ilavritavarsh, the only male person is Lord Shiva, the most powerful demigod. Goddess Durga, the wife of Lord Shiva, does not like any man to enter that land. If any foolish man dares to do so, she immediately turns him into a woman. I shall explain this later in the ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Verse 16. In Ilavrita Varsh, Lord Shiva is always encircled by 10 billion maidservants of Goddess Durga, who minister to him. The quadruple expansion of the Supreme Lord is composed of Vasudev, Pradumna, Aniruddha, and Sankarshan. Sankarshan, the fourth expansion, is certainly transcendental, but because his activities of destruction in the material world are in the mode of ignorance, he is known as Tamasi, the Lord's form in the mode of ignorance. Lord Shiva knows that Sankarshan is the original cause of his own existence, and thus he always meditates upon him in trance by chanting the following mantra. Purport. Sometimes we see a picture of Lord Shiva engaged in meditation. This verse explains that Lord Shiva is always meditating upon Lord Sankarshan in trance. Lord Shiva is in charge of the destruction of the material world. Lord Brahma creates the material world, Lord Vishnu maintains it, and Lord Shiva destroys it. Because destruction is in the mode of ignorance, Lord Shiva and his worshipable deity, Sankarshan, are technically called Tamasi. Lord Shiva is the incarnation of Tamogun. Since both Lord Shiva and Sankarshan are always enlightened and situated in the transcendental position, they have nothing to do with the modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. But because their activities involve them with the mode of ignorance, they are sometimes called tamasi. Verse 17. The most powerful Lord Shiva says, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you in your expansion as Lord Sankarshan. You are the reservoir of all transcendental qualities. Although you are unlimited, you remain unmanifest to the non-devotees. Verse 18. O my Lord, you are the only worshipable person, for you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the reservoir of all opulences. Your secure lotus feet are the only source of protection for all your devotees, whom you satisfy by manifesting yourself in various forms. O my Lord, you deliver your devotees from the clutches of material existence. Non-devotees, however, remain entangled in material existence by your will. Kindly accept me as your eternal servant. Verse 19. We cannot control the force of our anger. Therefore, when we look at material things, we cannot avoid feeling attraction or repulsion for them. But the Supreme Lord is never affected in this way. Although he glances over the material world for the purpose of creating, maintaining, and destroying it, he is not affected, even to the slightest degree. Therefore, one who desires to conquer the force of the senses must take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Then he will be victorious. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is always equipped with inconceivable potencies. Although creation takes place by his glancing over the material energy, he is not affected by the modes of material nature. Because of his eternally transcendental position, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears in this material world, the modes of material nature cannot affect him. Therefore, the Supreme Lord is called transcendence, and anyone who wants to be secure from the influence of the modes of material nature must take shelter of him. Verse 20. For persons with impure vision, the Supreme Lord's eyes appear like those of someone who indiscriminately drinks intoxicating beverages. Thus bewildered, such unintelligent persons become angry at the Supreme Lord, and due to their angry mood, the Lord himself appears angry and very fearful. However, this is an illusion. When the wives of the serpent demon were agitated by the touch of the Lord's lotus feet, due to shyness they could proceed no further in their worship of him. Yet the Lord remained unagitated by their touch, for he is equipoised in all circumstances. Therefore, who will not worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Purport. Anyone who remains unagitated, even in the presence of cause for agitation, is called dhira or equipoised. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, being always in a transcendental position, is never agitated by anything. Therefore, someone who wants to become dhira must take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Dhiras tatra namuyati. A person who is equipoised in all circumstances is never bewildered. Prahlad Maharaj is a perfect example of a dhira. When the fierce form of Nrisingadev appeared in order to kill Hiranyakashipu, Prahlad was unagitated. He remained calm and quiet, whereas others, including even Lord Brahma, were frightened by the features of the Lord. Verse 21. Lord Shiva continued, "All the great sages accept the Lord as the source of creation, maintenance, and destruction, although he actually has nothing to do with these activities. Therefore, the Lord is called unlimited. Although the Lord in his incarnation as Shesha holds all the universes on his hoods, each universe feels no heavier than a mustard seed to him. Therefore, what person desiring perfection will not worship the Lord?" Purport. The incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, known as Shesha or Ananta, has unlimited strength, fame, wealth, knowledge, beauty, and renunciation. As described in this verse, Ananta's strength is so great that the innumerable universes rest on his hoods. He has the bodily features of a snake with thousands of hoods, and since his strength is unlimited, all the universes resting on his hoods feel no heavier than mustard seeds. We can just imagine how insignificant a mustard seed is on the hood of a serpent. In this connection, the reader is referred to Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, Chapter 5, verses 117 through 125. There it is stated that Lord Vishnu's incarnation as the serpentine Anantashesh Naga supports all the universes on his hoods. By our calculation, a universe may be very, very heavy, but because the Lord is Ananta, unlimited, he feels the weight to be no heavier than a mustard seed. Verses 22 and 23. From that Supreme Personality of Godhead appears Lord Brahma, whose body is made from the total material energy, the reservoir of intelligence predominated by the passionate mode of material nature. From Lord Brahma, I myself am born as a representation of false ego known as Rudra. By my own power, I create all the other demigods, the five elements, and the senses. Therefore, I worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is greater than any of us and under whose control are situated all the demigods, material elements and senses, and even Lord Brahma and I myself, like birds bound by a rope. Only by the Lord's grace can we create, maintain, and annihilate the material world. Therefore, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Being. Report. A summary of creation is given in this verse. From Sankarshan, Mahavishnu expands, and from Mahavishnu, Garbhodakshay Vishnu expands. Lord Brahma, who was born of Garbhodakshay Vishnu, fathers Lord Shiva, from whom all the other demigods gradually evolve. Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Vishnu are incarnations of the different material qualities. Lord Vishnu is actually above all material qualities, but he accepts control of Sattva-gun, the mode of goodness, to maintain the universe. Lord Brahma is born from the Mahat-tattva. Brahma creates the entire universe, Lord Vishnu maintains it, and Lord Shiva annihilates it. The Supreme Personality of Godhead controls all the most important demigods, especially Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, exactly as the owner of a bird controls it by binding it with a rope. Sometimes vultures are controlled in this way. Verse 24. The illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead binds all of us conditioned souls to this material world. Therefore, without being favored by him, persons like us cannot understand how to get out of that illusory energy. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Lord, who is the cause of creation and annihilation. Purport. Krishna clearly states in Bhagavad Gita, Daivyesha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya, mameva ye prapadyante mayam itam tarantite. This divine energy of mine, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. All conditioned souls working within the illusory energy of the Lord consider the body to be the self, and thus they continuously wander throughout the universe, taking birth in different species of life and creating more and more problems. Sometimes they become disgusted with the problems and seek out a process by which they can get out of this entanglement. Unfortunately, such so-called research workers are unaware of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His illusory energy, and thus all of them work only in darkness, never finding a way out. So-called scientists and advanced research scholars are ludicrously trying to find the cause of life. They take no notice of the fact that life is already being produced. What will be their credit if they find out the chemical composition of life? All their chemicals are nothing but different transformations of the five elements: earth, water, fire, air, and ether. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, the living entity is never created, na jayate mriyate va kadachin. There are five gross material elements and three minor material elements, mind, intelligence, and ego, and there are eternal living entities. The living entity desires a certain type of body, and by the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that body is created from material nature, which is nothing but a kind of machine handled by the Supreme Lord. The Lord gives the living entity a particular type of mechanical body, and the living entity must work with it according to the law of fruitive activities. Fruitive activities are described in this verse. Karma pamanim mayam. The living entity is situated on a machine, the body, and according to the order of the Supreme Lord, he operates the machine. This is the secret of transmigration of the soul from one body to another. The living entity thus becomes entangled in fruitive activities in this material world. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, manasa stanindriyani prakritistani karshati. The living entity is struggling very hard against the six senses, which include the mind. In all the activities of creation and annihilation, the living entity is entangled in fruitive activities, which are executed by the illusory energy, Maya. He is exactly like a computer handled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The so-called scientists say that nature acts independently, but they cannot explain what nature is. Nature is nothing but a machine operated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When one understands the operator, his problems of life are solved. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Bahunam janmanam ante jnanavam mam prapadyate, vasudeva sarvam iti samahatma sudurlabha. After many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. A sane man, therefore, surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus gets out of the clutches of the illusory energy, Maya. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 5th canto, 17th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Descent of the River Ganges.